Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I do interviews with entrepreneurs about how they build their businesses. And a few years ago, five actually, I did an interview with today's entrepreneur. And check out this headline, I'm kind of proud of it. Ugly Meter, how to make $500,000 by destroying kids' self-esteem. It was such a fun interview. This guy created an app that allowed you to take a photo of yourself and then it would give you a rating from 0 to 10 about to let you know how ugly you were. And it did just fantastically. The app got a lot of press. It was on Howard Stern. I think the day after being on Howard Stern, it did an extra $80,000 in revenue. And it was one of several apps that Joe Overline and his company created. And I remember looking at their website at the time, and it said something like, "Want us to build an app like this for you?" And there was a button there. And for the most part, we ignored that part of the business. I think it was still kind of early. He was just getting going with that. And my focus is on what people do, not what they're going to do. But a few weeks ago, Joe emailed me and he said, "Andrew, we did it. We used to be a two-person operation. My co-founder designed the apps. I built them. And yeah, we got a lot of press, but I never wanted to be a one-hit wonder. And we're not, Andrew. We actually now have a real agency. We're building real apps. We've got a big team of people. And I'd like to come back to Mixergy to talk about how we did it and what's going on right now." So that's what we've got here. Joe Overline is here for a repeat performance. He is the co-founder of Swing Dev. They build web apps and mobile apps, and they do everything from the design to creating scalable backends. And they specialize in working with startups and early stage companies. This interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first will help you do your email marketing right. Not stupid email marketing, which a lot of other people specialize in, but marketing automation done right. It's called ActiveCampaign. The second company is a system that we use to book guests and that I use whenever I want to close sales. It's called PipeDrive, but I'll tell you more about both of those later. Joe, welcome back.
It's great to be here. It's been too long.
Yeah. You know I'm going to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. Last time we were about $500,000 from one app. Today, how much revenue you guys build? How much revenue are you guys doing annually from developing apps and other products for other clients?
Right in the seven figures now. We're growing consistently.
Give me a sense of it. We're talking 5 to 10 or 1 to 5.
5 to 10 is accurate.
Five to ten million.
Yeah.
And how many people on the team?
We have almost 50 now.
50.
Yeah.
And I know that you and I have both moved to the Bay Area since the last interview, but your team is in multiple places. Where are you guys?
Right. So we have a local office in Oakland. We have a team in Warsaw, Poland, and we have a third team in Cape Town, South Africa.
Wowee. All right. Give me an example of an app that you made that you're especially proud of.
Oh, there's proud of. Well. Ugly Meter was interesting because it built all our success, but I wasn't necessarily proud of it.
You seemed proud of it at the time. I even told you what I was going to call the headline, and you said, yeah. "I dig it. I like that you were willing to enjoy it." But you know what? Actually, I just talked over what you were saying. You were about to say that you weren't especially proud of it. Why not? What was it about it?
I mean, I'm proud of the success and what we turned it into and how it was leveraged to make something better. From a technology perspective, it wasn't that innovative. And for me, I want to create like new exciting things, you know, and that didn't have it. Although it had great success, it wasn't the technological innovation that I
see you set out to do that. So was there an app that was especially technologically sophisticated that you're proud that you guys created?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, now that you mention it, there was something really cool we did a couple years ago for Disney, actually. And it was early on when like AR stuff was kind of almost just a fancy unknown thing. And we made a really cool thing for kids to explore the park at Disney where they would take their phones or their iPads and they would find these special little Mickey Mouse characters around the park. And you know, when the kids would find them, they're bored waiting in line and they would find it. If they would hold their phone up to it, on the screen, the character would actually come to life on their screen. And it was so fun to watch because you'd see a kid holding up an iPad and he'd like look at it and Mickey Mouse would come alive and start talking to him on the screen. And without fail, you have this iPad held up and the kid looks behind the iPad to see, because they're so confused on
yeah.
like how this has happened. And like, to see that happen with users was like, I mean, it was just cool, but like to see kids just get excited about it was a really neat thing, and to see magical, like we like to create magic, and that was a situation where I really could do it.
So my sense is that at the time you guys had a website called dappergentleman.com. You still do. That's where you featured apps like the Ugly Meter, and you had some kind of security app, and you had some kind of an app called OSnap, which was some kind of a camera app. I don't fully understand them. But you were playing around with lots of apps, and the featured part of that site was the button that got people to contact you if they wanted an app developed. My sense is that button is what drove the first few customers. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And once we started getting press, people, you know, we needed a way, you know, as simple as it is, people needed to know how to get a hold of us. And yeah, it truly got some amazing leads through that. I mean, not only just founders with ideas, but like, you know, we did deals with Lexus and ESPN and all the, like we had.
And
like,
they're coming in from like a USA Today story or Today Show story about the Ugly Meter. And they're saying, you know what? These people are interesting, and maybe they could build apps for us. They weren't dismissing you because of the Ugly Meter.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, there was mixed press about that, but I think in the end, people, you know, the app world was relatively new back then, and people knew they needed apps, and they didn't know who to contact. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Impressive. Okay. What I'm curious about is the why. Most people who have agencies do it because they don't have a lot of money, they don't have a lot of resources, and they want to make money by doing work for other people. And often in the back of their heads, they are thinking to themselves, one day I'll find my own app. One day I'll create my own product. I won't have to deal with these clients anymore, and I'll do big things. You seem to be going backwards. Why didn't you say why did you go that way as opposed to saying, I'll just keep hammering away at these apps and one of them will be a long-term sustainable business like Evernote, for example?
Well, you know, I realized, you know, actually through, I'll tell you a story of a great failure I had that I realized that doing our own work wasn't a guaranteed way. I mean, it was like a lottery. Like I had no expectations for Ugly Meter to be successful. And a couple of my friends and I, after that, we were like, what do we do next? We made a bunch of money. Like, and you know, we're software developers and the dream is to like make games, right? So we're like, we're going to make a game. And we spent the next year making a game called Monsters Invade Oz. And it was kind of like a, think of the easiest way to explain it is like a Pokemon style game. And we poured like our hearts and souls into that. I mean, we were working day and night for a year. We got it done. We're just so excited. And in our heads, we had such success before. And like, we'll just have more success, right? It's an easy thing to do.
And now you're actually going to put effort into it, where before you were being a little goofy with it. So of course, effort's going to be better than goofy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's better than luck, of course. Like now we're going to make active decisions to be successful. And, you know, we had the game. We launched it at the Game Developers Conference, and we actually won their game GDC Game of the Year. We met Apple there. Apple loved it. Apple featured it. And but this was right when the free apps and in-app purchases were like kind of a new thing. People were trying to figure that out, and we did it all wrong. And
what'd you do wrong with it?
We didn't really have a balance of, you know, like setting people up in an environment where they wanted to spend more money. And like, it's hard to get a dollar out of people. It's really harder than it seems. And yeah. I think we were too motivated by money, and we were being greedy about like holding too much back, and it just turned people off. And while Apple featured the app, we rose in the charts, you know, we're in like in the top 10, we're great, but no, I mean, almost literally no money. I mean, we had hundreds of thousands of downloads, and I think total spending ended up being like $200. I mean, it was.
Wowie, I see. All right. And so you realize, hey, you know what? This thing is actually harder than it seems. We kind of lucked into something that did well, but that's no way to build a long-term business. Let's not allow this kind of failure to keep happening. We're going to build apps for other people. You started building apps for other people. Your first clients came in. What did you learn about working with clients in the beginning? What's a mistake that you made?
taking the wrong clients is
the wrong clients.
Yeah. Taking the wrong clients, and like setting the right expectation. You know, we realize that you can't just like, to us, like I wanted to use what I learned and help other people succeed. So, you know, we really needed clients that were actually, you know, going to put effort and be more like partners. You know, like I knew we had to build a business off referrals. I realized how powerful those incoming leads were, and I didn't want to be a sales guy. And so we knew from the beginning we had to make every client out there should be our cheerleader to bring us more clients. But the only way that happens is if we were setting them up for success and working with the right people.
So give me an example of a wrong client without mentioning their names, because I know once you mention their names, you're going to want to hold back on details. So give me an example. Early days, you guys are starting, you're building apps for other people. This guy seems okay. This company seems good. She's a good client, it seems, but what happens? Give me an example.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you one. We had a client that he wanted to change how booking was done in the hair salon industry, okay. Right? And that was his area of expertise. And the thing is a lot, really everyone has app ideas, but they underestimate the amount of work that it takes to execute those ideas. So we didn't quite realize that back then. He's a nice guy. We worked really hard for him. The thing, you know, we helped bring him to market with this product that was great. But you know, he really just didn't take the next step of like realizing that it should be treated like a real business. And, you know, so he invested ended up being a failure for everybody, because, you know, for him, you know, he had this dream of like changing his industry.
Joe, you're telling me, look, this guy's paying you money to build the app for him. You built the app, but it fails as a business because he's not promoting it. He thinks, I create this, salons need this, we're going to kill. They don't kill. They come back to you and they say, hey, Joe, you and the team screwed up, because if you did a good job, then this thing would have done better. That's the problem.
Right.
And so you wanted, as a result of that, to take on clients who had reasonable expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But isn't it enough to just say, look, maybe instead of changing clients, to say when you sit down with the client, all I could do is build this for you. You're going to have to market it so that you focus on doing a good job there, but not trying to manage their business at the same time.
You can say that up front, but no one remembers that when they're trying to blame someone for failure. So
I see. And the truth is that if you know that they're going to fail, if you don't stop them, there's some responsibility on your part or some pain that you're going to have to deal with, because when someone fails, there's pain to go everywhere.
Well, yeah, and we don't, and it's not, for us, we have a genuine interest in the people succeeding. So if we don't think someone has a valid business model or that they're not going to successfully execute, like we will not take their money from them. Okay. And we're upfront and honest about that. We don't, you know, we have a culture of like blatant transparency and honesty. So we'll tell them like, look, you know, we don't feel this is a valid business model. We don't feel right taking your money.
By the way, Joe, I'm standing for the very first time in an interview. I finally gave in and bought a stand-up desk because I couldn't keep sitting all day. And then I said, you know what? As long as I'm getting a stand-up desk, let's get one of those flatbed treadmills, the walking treadmills I could put underneath. You know, maybe being more active will help me. This is my first hour standing up. My feet are kind of feeling a little bit of pain because of it. So they gave me a free mat, you know, to put underneath my feet. So I've got that on the treadmill now. I'm sure I'm going to get used to it because I'm okay standing up. What bothers me is that I spent time yesterday with a guy just adjusting my lighting, and it's way too bright up here. Like I need a visor and maybe not enough down here. I don't know. But
I've been considering the standing desk transition too, but I haven't.
People made love it. People love it. And even like, a lot of people who love it, they talk nonstop about it. So I feel like maybe they're just kind of in some kind of a cult. But my wife's been using it for 3 years. She never said a word about it until I said I'm buying one. And then she said, you know, I have it. Stop yapping. It's not like, I get it. It helps. It's really
useful. The treadmill, though, that's ambitious. I could never go that far. Like,
I know. And you know what? Frankly, I hate that I spend $1,000 on a treadmill that won't go more than 4 miles an hour. 4 miles an hour is not a run. But you know, and I wanted to be quiet. There are other people in the office. I want to make sure that I'm not being the jerk. Hey, anyway, I'm acknowledging why
4 miles per hour is a run.
All right, back to the business. I get the sense of how you're doing it. I also understand it's you and your co-founder, two people programming, two people, I mean, one programming, one designing, but two people doing all the work. When you, at what point did you start bringing in other people, and which other people did you bring in?
When we realized we couldn't do it all on our own. You know, we found people that we knew and that we trusted and had, I was lucky enough to have people that had varied skills that balanced. So that balanced ours to actually really
developers first.
So the first step was to bring in, two key developers, cause I couldn't do everything myself. So we were really fortunate where we got the right people, to come in and help us. So we had two of those guys come in who are our key partners now and actually work and run our Warsaw office. And one of my childhood friends, Matt, was also there too. And he actually lived out in Warsaw. And he's actually the one that kind of created that relationship. And those three together have...
Your co-founder lived in Warsaw?
Yeah. High school friend actually left Arizona and ended up over in Europe. And
wait, I thought your co-founder was Ryan Allen.
So he was, but he's not in part of this now. So he wanted to get in the education industry and kind of went on a different path. And
I see. Okay, so then you brought in another co-founder, a guy you knew for a long time. Who was he living in Warsaw at the time?
Yeah, he's actually living there. He'd lived there for several years, and we were just talking one day. It was kind of random, but he was like, you know, there's real talent here. They're very strong in engineering. If you have more than you can take on, let's try to build a team out here. Yeah.
And did you hire full time? No, you just hired people as you needed them at first, right? And by the way, as you answered, I'm going to adjust the lighting. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Who did you hire first?
So we brought those guys in as partners, really. And we didn't really treat them as employees, but really our next hire was, you know, it's a big leap to hire your first full-time employee, and I had done it before, so I was comfortable with it, but you know, in other businesses. But we got our first full-time employee, and he's still with us. You know, this was like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And things just naturally progressed from there. We really, because of our small team, and we're very close, and we all had similar views, we built like this family style relationship with everyone in our business.
What did a developer cost in Warsaw full-time?
Actually, no, I have no idea because I was not involved in that.
Really?
Yeah. I trusted these guys to run that office for me, and I have to have...
But you have a sense of like percentage-wise. Are we talking about 50% of a U.S. developer, 75%? Well,
actually, you know, it's interesting because wages have actually, I know, have gone up over the past few years, and excluding the Bay Area, which is just ridiculous and skewed what people make. People, remote work is like a real thing now. So, guys will make, you know, 50 to 75% of what a U.S. developer would make, but with far more talent, frankly.
I see. Yeah. And they're happier, and we'll talk about happiness because I know that's really important to you. I don't know why, but you guys really obsess on, I guess I do know why, but man, you guys really obsess on it. Let's talk about one other thing, and then we'll get into the sponsor and come back into developing the business. The thing that I'm curious about is a company like yours takes on a lot of clients. You need a system for really taking in new clients, for improving the way you interact with them, right? What I found is that consulting companies are often proud of that process. What was your process in the beginning, and what's it like now?
It was a mess, really. I mean, it was a mess in the beginning.
When it was a mess, how did you do it?
Just, we had no process. We've really learned in the past, like even to the past year, that we need processes for things. We can't just, you know, before it was just like everybody does whatever to make the business move forward.
A customer would come in and you guys would just all huddle together on a call.
Whoever would talk to him could, like, it was just really random. And, you know, as we got bigger and we started having pods of teams working on projects and we couldn't know everything, like things would start to fall through the cracks. Like we would even lose valuable business leads. So we really had to break things. And actually it's a focus of our company right now is just restructuring processes and procedures from the ground up.
Like fixing them. But you do have some systems at this point, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's actually great. We're heavily investing in custom software to, you know, we've realized the key to a successful project is like great communication with the client. And we're creating things to do that.
You know what? I worked with this company. I wanted them to design slides for an event that I was speaking at. They did beautiful work. Gorgeous. But beyond that, what really excited me about working with them was they had a system for working with me. Everything from like the very first call had a clear outline, clear direction, clear set of people on the call, and they were clear to introduce who was on the call because my sense was they had a process because they probably screwed up at some point in the past. They used Basecamp to keep things organized. Not the most recent version of Basecamp, but the one that they knew and that they liked. Mm-hmm. And everything was communicated in Basecamp, so there was never any question. If I ever had any question about something, I wouldn't have to go and ask them and wait for even an hour response. It was in Basecamp. And it was always a set of steps. Here's what's coming up next. And I always felt like these people don't know my message. But then I looked at the process and I said, this is so well organized. They've done this. They know it. They've got their thing together. I'm just going to trust their process because it's so polished. I love that.
Yeah. Right, so go ahead.
I want to ask you about your system, but I've got to tell people about my first sponsor. Hey, this whole idea of having a systemized way of communicating with people, it's what we do when we work with customers one-on-one, right? I have somebody who comes in to do an interview with me. I have a clear process with him. Joe had no doubt that I would show up right here. I had no doubt that Joe would show up here. He had no doubt that I would be prepared. I had no doubt that he would be prepared because we have a system when we're working with one-on-one. The problem is when we as entrepreneurs, as business people, work with large numbers of people, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, right? Often what we do is we make the mistake of speaking to all of them the same way, of not having a process to understand where they are in their relationship with us and improving it, right? Maybe someone who's starting out should not get the latest email newsletter, for example. Maybe they should get an understanding of what we're about. Maybe they should get a couple of things that we know are going to help them, etc. So the difference that I'm talking about is the difference between using the standard email systems that most businesses, frankly, including mine, start off with, that all they do is they make it easy for you to collect email addresses and send out the same message to everyone. And they make it dead simple, looks really pretty now. And you think you're making the right move because these people advertise everywhere. They'll advertise on NPR, they'll do bus ads, et cetera, et cetera. So it feels comforting, but it doesn't work. And it gives people a really bad experience. So the alternative is something called marketing automation, where as soon as somebody joins your mailing list, first of all, they make it easy for them to join your mailing list. And second, as soon as they join your mailing list, they're onboarded properly. Maybe they're asked a question. They don't have to respond by emailing back. They could click a link. Are you in cold weather or warm weather? They click a link. If they're in cold weather, you stop sending them ads for t-shirts and shorts. You start telling them about how you also have hoodies. If they're in different temperatures, they get different messages, but also where they are in their relationship with you. Maybe in the beginning, you don't start by selling. How many people out there, Joe, have gotten emails from a business where it's, here's our newsletter and what's 10% off? Well, I'm not ready to buy 10% off. I don't trust you yet. I trust Amazon, but I don't trust you. Warm me up a little bit. Imagine if the business knew first 2 or 3 weeks that a client is joining our mailing list or that a potential client is joining our mailing list, we just educate them. We tell them about what it's like to work out in our clothes. We tell them how we do it, why we do this, why even though there's Nike in the world and Amazon in the world, we want to create a brand new fitness clothing line. And we tell them and we bring them in. And then after 3 weeks, we send them an offer. Or maybe we get a little smart. Maybe we speed it up. After a week, we send them an offer. If we see that they've been on our site and they've been clicking on the same shirt over and over again, then we know they love it. They need something to push them over the edge. And in that case, we have smart automation and we email them and we say, it's 10% off because we want you to understand what this product is like by feeling it personally. All right. This is marketing automation. I want everyone who's listening to me have marketing automation. The problem is most software for marketing automation is too complicated. You need a team of people to use it. Here's one piece of software that you can manage yourself, that your virtual assistant can manage for you, that as your team grows, they can all understand it and integrate it into every part of your business. That's the key behind ActiveCampaign. If you want to try them, they have a special URL where they're going to give you your second month free. They're going to give you two free one-on-one sessions with experts who will help you think through what to automate. So you're not automating everything, but you're not missing out on the key parts that should be intelligently automated. And if you've used one of those other products and you want to migrate over, they will migrate you for free. Here's a special URL. It is activecampaign.com/mixergy. activecampaign.com/mixergy. Go check them out. And frankly, even if you don't use them and use a different software, I want you to look at that center set of images where they show you how they automate. It'll help you think through your automation. activecampaign.com/mixergy. All right, Joe, back to your systems. I understand the chaotic early days of systems. Talk to me about what it's like today, not what you're going to create next, but assuming you're using off-the-shelf software, I think that merging of off-the-shelf software is interesting for us to learn from. What do you use? How do you onboard customers?
So we have a real personal touch because we're a small agency and we're working hand in hand. Our key tools, our processes are a lot better. They still need improvement, of course. They always do. But we heavily rely on Slack for communication with clients. And we do a lot of integrations with Slack for that. Our developers use Jira to manage projects and tickets.
You know, let me put some structure around all this so that I can give you help and not just give you this open-ended question. One of the things that I notice that happens when I go to your website is you have this form that comes in at me one question at a time. I think it's like three or four questions where at the end of it, I know how much a web app or a mobile app would cost me, right? It's like, do you want custom design or a standard design? Are you going to do a login, no login, that kind of thing, right? I answer those questions. At the end, you say, great, here's essentially what it's going to cost you, and fill in this form and we'll have a consultation to really give you more clarity than this estimate that I just gave you on the web page. What happens with that? Where does that contact go in your system?
So our lead validation is a very important thing for us, like working with the right clients is. So the first step of that whole thing, once we collect that core of information, like we have a sales manager here in the US that jumps in. We use Salesforce to manage those clients.
So it goes from there into Salesforce. The sales manager goes in. Does he have any extra information, any extra insight on the person beyond what they just filled out? Like, do you guys enhance the information with LinkedIn data, with outside data at all?
It's interesting you ask that. So just something we've started to do this year is we actually have we brought in a guy that does market research and like company research. So when we jump into a first call with somebody, we know a lot about them. We know everything that can be found, not only about their company, what phase they're at, you know, background of the founders, where their expertise is at. We look at who their competitors are. This new thing that they want to build, what's their market advantage? What are their goals? How will it be successful?
I see. So there's a researcher whose whole job is to understand the potential client before they even get to the salesperson.
Right. So our salesperson can jump into that process. And actually, we have three people now. And they jump into that process like with, you know, armed with as much knowledge as we can give them to, you know, not only speak like they know what they're talking about, but, you know, actually have a fruitful conversation.
So today, Joe, if I were to come to you with an idea for a salon booking service, you would understand who I was, but you'd also say, Andrew, there are these four other competitors. Here's what's interesting about them. Before we start building, let's talk about how you're going to react to that, right?
Right. And it's interesting because a lot of times we find out these founders aren't even aware of these competitors. They just have their idea and they want to go forward. And then it's actually great for us as a company because then, you know, we've done this little bit of research and these guys are just so good at it that we have. And then we're truly like come off as the experts
them. That's a great takeaway. Let me suggest for someone who doesn't have a full-time person, a site where they can do this. The site is called People, but it's spelled PIPL.com. If you type in or paste in an email address, they will find information for you, like their LinkedIn profile, their other online profiles. You can, of course, when you know their website, you can put it into a whois.com search and get some more information about the site and who owns it. So there are a few tools like that. What I would love is a Zapier, and I'm going to ask the audience for this. Maybe there's someone out there who knows of a Zapier integration that we can use. So if someone fills out a form, I know it now goes into my CRM, which happens to be Pipedrive. I'd love for that to also be populated with more data. Not as much as you can because we don't have a full-time person on that, but I'd love to get a little bit more before we get on a call with the client. Okay, so salesperson has that information. How fast before the salesperson will contact back?
Our goal is within 24 hours to have all that research and information.
All the research comes in. Mm-hmm. Do you just make a phone call out, or do you schedule a call?
It depends. It depends what the client wants. Like usually we'll make an initial call, or we'll make an email and schedule something and get an initial kickoff call with usually our project manager here first, but depending on like what the project is, sometimes we bring in our CTO or like other relevant project managers up front.
And they all get on a call. Okay. Yep. Project for a mobile app might cost me $60,000, at least the way that I filled it out using, I think I wanted everything. Just like I put the treadmill under my desk, I said, let's see what happens if I put in every single bell and whistle. About 60,000. I don't think I got all the bells and whistles in. At that point, you've invested some time in potentially bringing me in. Assuming that I come in, what's your system for asking me more than the form? What's your system for keeping track of it, for passing it to the developers? And then we'll get into time and so on.
Okay, cool. So again, one of the things we've learned from past mistakes, every project now starts off with a product design sprint. And it's such a great value to the client. And it also like empowers us to do the best thing for the client also.
So I sign the paperwork and you guys immediately start with a design sprint to give me something to look at.
Yeah, so it's a 1 to 2 week process. The full team goes at it. We have an architect, developers, our head of UX and UI.
What's your process for understanding what I want?
Well, that's about finding the right client. We don't want the client that just wants to hand off and have us do things. We want people that are partners, and the client is.
But do you have a questionnaire? Do you have something else?
Yeah, so we will prepare questions ahead of time because every project is usually unique. So we will, you know, we have an intro call and then we take that information. We have a next set of questions. And once we feel like we have a good understanding and the client's ready to move forward, yeah, we start with the product design sprint. And at the end of this, product design is a 20 to 40 page report with wireframes and everything that's like an actual game plan of how this is going to be done, how it'll be done like on time and on budget. So, which is oddly a unique business model in outsourcing to do those two things.
I see. Do you have a set of specific questions that you ask and you kind of pull out from, or is it always somebody handwriting new sets of questions to ask the client?
So we'll have core questions, you know, like the things that are, you know, we want to make sure they have a monetization strategy, that they actually have defining features that are different than the competition, that they have the, you know, ability to go after this market. Like, are they in this market? Like, you don't want someone who's, you know, a mechanic trying to revolutionize the real estate industry because they think they know about it. So we want to make sure they have the right profile.
How do you keep all these questions in?
We just use Google Drive for a lot of stuff. Okay. You know, we just have some basic like docs.
You weren't pre-interviewed. I knew you, and I had a set of things that I wanted to drill in on in this interview. But usually we have a set of questions, right? You weren't pre-interviewed, were you?
No.
No, right? Yeah, good. I thought I saw a look like, hey, Andrew, this is a set of notes. Go get it. But there isn't. So usually what we have is we have a template. Someone will copy that template into a new fold, into our pre-interview folder. Then they'll share it with you. And then they'll go through a set of questions with you before they send it over to you. They'll delete some. They'll edit some. They'll make some adjustments. And then they'll use it as a template. Sounds like that's what you guys do.
Yeah. So we've tried to automate as much things as we can. So we use a combination of Trello, Zapier, Slack and Google Drive, and all those things work together. So when clients
walk me through this, geek out with me about the details of it.
Sure. I mean, the first step of anything is we have a Google form where we collect information from a user and we ask a whole list of questions, you know, just basic business stuff, their ideas, their, you know, the platforms they want to go after.
So before you even get to a call where you're asked questions by a person, there's a form. And it's a Google form. Interesting. And so the Google form spits the results into Google Drive and then into a Trello card.
Yeah. So it goes into a Trello card. And what we do, so it creates a Trello card in which we call our lead pipeline. And our lead pipeline has all the columns and there's a new lead, right? And as the CEO and head of the US side, it's up to me to look. I look at each one of those leads. So when a new lead is created, Zapier actually creates a Slack room for that lead.
Slack room for the lead.
Slack channel.
Slack channel, right. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
To discuss, and it posts the results of the survey and all those things. So it's all there, you know, estimated budget they have and all those things. And I I go look and I examine that, and I will talk to the sales manager if he, you know, he's had the conversations. His gut feel, we rely on our gut feelings a lot. I slide it over to go or no go. Yep. And if it goes, if I slide it over to the go column, you know, Zapier sees it and then just kicks off like the next step. It notifies the project manager, the appropriate people that are part of the project. And then, and then the ball starts rolling from there.
Zapier is just such an amazing tool. It's awesome. Stuff like that. So good. So good. All right. I see it. And so it's constantly moving in Trello, Slack group where you guys chat. And I'm guessing that when a Slack channel, gets created, you're also getting pinged in some other channel to say, hey, guys, there's a new customer who's there.
Right. Right. Uh-huh. There's reminders set for deadlines that are, because when we fill in these things, deadlines are set for like either responses or bids or anything like that.
And that's in Trello.
Trello. And then it also pushes to Slack also.
Wow. So your Trello is your project management tool.
Right. And, you know, right now, but the thing is that we've kind of like, I don't know if this is a typical use for Trello, but yeah, with Zapier, it's actually made it very powerful. Because again, we're not dealing with hundreds or thousands of leads. Like, we're very hands-on. You know, I know everyone we're working with by name. And so it's basically just, we have everyone and everything in columns, and weekly we do a new leads call where we review our new lead pipeline and discuss each project. Cause you know, we made mistakes where we just forget about something and like lose a six-figure deal just because we forgot.
I know. We've had that. I've had good guests, good friends who I interviewed, and we didn't publish the interview because our system was just, do you remember or not, right? As opposed to now we use Pipedrive, which is kind of like Trello in the sense that it's all or every step of the process is, has its own column, and you just keep moving a card for each person through all the columns. I see. And then you manually, this is a little too detailed, guys, and it's specifically meant for people who are real entrepreneurs. I want us to learn from this process so that we can improve our processes. I feel more and more that a business is a collection of processes. Some of them are clearly defined. Some of them are crappy and are going to cause you trouble. And some, frankly, are just kind of gut processes that we don't clearly define but work really well for us, right? Like in the book Blink, Malcolm Gladwell talks about the firefighter who walks into a room and immediately knows you got to get right out of there. And just as he walks out, the floor falls from under him. There is a set of understanding. There's some mental process that he's going through in that moment. It's not handwritten on a checklist, but he's going through it. And that's what allows him to get out before the fall collapses, before the floor collapses. And so I want to understand this stuff because I really want to understand business. The deadlines, how do you guys put them into Pipedrive? Into Trello? Handwritten, or are they also Zapier in?
It's actually on the card. We can put a due date for the next step. It's just
handwritten, or does Zapier automatically do that for you?
There's a field in Trello that actually allows us to select a date, and Zapier post it into Slack, and Slack reminders keep us going from there. And like, it's not the perfect system, and we certainly have a ways to go with it, but the important thing is we're not letting things fall through the cracks anymore. And this is not only with new leads. Like, we've seen mistakes. We had to integrate processes for billing too, because we would finish a product and then just like not invoice somebody.
Right.
I mean, like, that's bad.
Or you invoice them and you forget that you didn't get paid for it.
Yeah. Or what result, like, what were we supposed to bill them? Like, where's the single source of truth where, you know,
where do you keep that? Where's your single source of truth?
That's been a process. Now each project has a Google Drive folder. That's part of the Zapier start. You know, when we create,
it creates a folder for each.
A folder for that project. Every project has a 3-digit project code, so everything's organized.
And that's automatically created by Zapier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, you know what? One of the things that I used to screw up on is paying contractors. That we'd agree to something on the phone, and I go, "Great, I know what we agreed to. I know what the amount is. I got another call. I got to jump. Sorry. Not sorry, but thanks. Looking forward to working with you." And we work together. We get great, great results. And then I forget how much. So I'm kind of counting on them. So one of my processes now is I create a new Google Doc with our agreement, right? And we're talking about sometimes I just start off with someone for like $500, but I still want to understand it's $500 because they're testing me as much as I'm testing them, right? Is this Andrew a guy we can count on? So in there I say, it's going to cost this much. Here's when the project will be complete. Here's what we're expecting to get done. And I share the doc with both of them. actually both me and them.
I have a great recommendation. They're actually one of our biggest process improvements in that area, as far as contracts and things like that. We use Podio, and Podio is a service that it's like a process management type thing. But it's really cool. So what? We actually have our standard contracts and things, like our standard fields of a contract in Podio. And if we're talking with someone and like even something as simple as an NDA, right? Like everyone wants to sign an NDA and we need to do it. So we need this to be easy. So on an initial call, we can just put in Podio, we put their name, address, and click generate. Podio integrates with Right Signature, which is like DocuSign for, you know, just a smaller company. And within like 30 seconds, the client gets a personalized contract by email that they can electronically sign. And like, it's funny, that's very simple and it shouldn't impress anybody, but like other companies are so disorganized. They're like, wait a minute, we just started this call and you already have like a personalized thing in my inbox. And it just gives, you know, they realize that we've thought things through, like we're thinking ahead. So yeah,
I'm always impressed by that too. I should know that that's actually done through some system. But if someone sends me a contract right away, I feel like, wow, they've got a team in place. They know what they're doing and they sent it over and it's not generic where I fill in my name. I like it. I see Podio. Podio seems like a checklist process that allows multiple people to get assigned responsibilities and multiple apps to get assigned processes, right?
So yeah, and what makes Podio powerful is a software called Globaflow that integrates with it. And Podio actually bought them. It was so key to their service, but that allows you to create like all these, like say integrations with Right Signature. So it's really neat. So when a client's both signatures are executed, Right Signature actually takes the contract, makes a PDF, attaches it back into the field in Podio and emails the sales manager and then me a copy of the completed contract as a PDF. And all this happens automatic. Like it's the greatest thing in the world.
Wow. Yeah. I've never heard of it. They're owned by Citrix now. Sometimes I feel like, man, I just have all these different monthly payments. Like Podio is $9 a month for the basic plan, but you get Podio, then you get your Zapier plan, then you get your Trello doesn't cost anything, but maybe you need an extra feature from their pro plan, so you pay for that. And then someone else on the team needs Asana, so of course you pay for Asana. You guys pay for Slack also?
Mm-hmm, a lot.
Right? So it's like all this stuff all at once. I really admire people who could just deal with, I'm now learning to respect people who just work with Microsoft Office. It's all included. You don't have to worry about paying for Evernote and this and that, right? They've got whatever it is that you need. They all have it in place right there for you. And I've got to reconsider them. The problem is that my world, my people, have all moved to Google Drive. It's hard to get them on Microsoft Word. We've all moved to these other apps and these other platforms really hard.
And we actually took a serious look at Microsoft about 9 months ago because it was the same thing. It's like, wow, this could be our solution. It was hard to even define, but something was lacking there. It just didn't do it for us. So we're stuck with all these tools. But at Zapier, it really has done a lot to make all these scattered tools work together. And it's been really great.
Yeah. All right. Since we're talking about tools, I'll tell you guys about my tool. Frankly, we're going to talk about a different advertiser. You guys probably know who, but they're competitive with Joe's business. And I'm not looking to, actually they're not competitive, but it could be a little confusing. So I said, hey, Joe, I think maybe we shouldn't run it. And we didn't. And instead, I'm going to talk to you about a company that isn't even paying me, but it's so perfect for this conversation. And I've been talking about them forever without getting paid anyway. So I'll tell you about them. The company is called Pipedrive. I used to have a process for booking guests. As I've told you, it's really disorganized. You could see why I'm excited about my process. It gets results. My process is in Pipedrive. Whenever we suggest a guest, their card goes in the leftmost column. I do not allow the person who suggests a guest to also approve them. I want a second set of eyes because you people, you entrepreneurs are so freaking charismatic. You're so freaking persuasive. You will talk to one person on the team. Maybe it's even me and I'll go, I got to get this guy on. And then I think later on, the hell was I even thinking of? This was not a good fit. He's just a nice person, but his business is just 2 months old. It's not a good fit. So I need a second pair of eyes. And so we put the person's card in the leftmost column, as in suggested, and then someone else has to move them one column to the right, which is approved. And if they're not approved, then we move them to lost and we explain why. we always have this ongoing list of why we reject people so that we understand internally what it takes to hire someone, what it takes to get someone on board as an interview and what is actually not a good fit for us. So we have someone brand new starting out maybe in a couple of months. They can go back in and see all the reasons why we rejected people and have an understanding of where we are. Right? And then we continue with the process. The next step is to send out a request for an interview if we haven't reached out to them or they didn't reach out to us yet. Then we send a follow-up and bah, 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 all the way through the end. If at any time they reject us, again, we mark them as lost and we continue to explain why. We require that when someone's marked as lost, we know why. And that way, at the end of the year, we can go back in or maybe several times during the year, we can go in and see, why did we get rejected? Why did we get turned out? Oh, we had bad email addresses, so maybe we can hire someone to find the right email addresses. Maybe it makes sense to pay a service $10 a month to find us the right email addresses, which is what we did. Or maybe people reject us because they don't know who we are, so we should tell them who we know or who we've interviewed that they would respect. I don't know what it is, but we have this whole process. Now, that's for booking interviews. I've also used it when I want to start a new business, Bot Academy, which teaches people how to create bots and allows businesses to hire our graduates. I want to understand all the people who are applying to learn from this program. And so I created a new Pipedrive account, brand new. I paid from scratch. I wanted it to be a separate business. And when someone applied to learn, I would create a card for them and then I would call them up because I wanted to understand who they were. And then I would take notes in Pipedrive. The whole system was organized. So if you were interested in learning, you either got accepted and paid or you got rejected and I understood what was a bad fit for us and then we could change our marketing in the future based on that. All right, this is a lot of yapping actually. Here's the best way to see it. I'm not going to send you to pipedrive.com. They didn't pay, but that's not why I'm not going to do it. I'm going to send you to a URL that I created on our site that will show you my screen as I explain to you how Pipedrive works. Go check out Mixergy.com/Pipedrive. You're going to see my screen, my computer screen, complete with all the apps that I have open that day. And you're going to see how I use Pipedrive to close sales. It's Mixergy.com/Pipedrive. Mixergy.com/Pipedrive.
And I can back up all your opinions on Pipedrive. I've used it and it's great.
You have, right? It's yeah, fantastic.
It is. It really is.
It's like CRM and project management in one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Any other tools that you're especially excited about? Because now, and then we'll move on to team.
That we're using right now? Not
to
really.
Help coordinate. What's missing that you guys are willing to create your own project management solution from scratch, essentially?
General business process management is, you know, we really believe in, like a lot of dev houses will just bill 8 hours a day per guy. You know, that's just what they do because, hey, the guys are working all day. We don't do that. You know, we've built tools, custom tools for time tracking and to make it easier, but we don't develop them as like to oversee what the developers do. We empower the developers like, hey, we need to have honest and transparent time tracking, but we want to make your life easier also. How do we combine those two goals? And we've created custom software that we use internally and with our partners. And not only does it like provide transparency to the clients, but makes the developer's life easier.
All right, let's talk people.
All right.
If you heard me type, I was telling the person I was supposed to meet with afterwards, I don't want to get off the phone with Joe. We're going to go a little longer. So I pushed my next meeting. I want to talk about people because basically your whole business is people, right? Everything that you're selling is the process and the people who are going to be creating it. I want to understand... I think to get how you think about people, we should talk about this Cooking Fridays. What happens on Friday?
So Friday in our office, since the beginning, and it was much easier in the beginning, is we rotate and someone different in the office cooks breakfast for the whole office every Friday morning. And, you know...
You have a kitchen in your office?
We do, actually. You do? Yeah. Yeah. So, well, our first office was actually in an apartment. So that made it easy. But our new office we're in now, we got to model it and build the whole thing, you know. So we actually have two kitchens and it really encourages like the idea within the company that we are like essentially a family and we eat together. We cook for other people and we don't, and it's not like anybody cooks. Like when I travel to Warsaw, like I will cook for the office. Like we, us feel that the
isn't that a waste of your time? You're flying into Warsaw. You've got very little time there. Instead of spending time talking to people one-on-one, you are cooking, the kind of thing that you could hire someone there to do.
I actually think it's the best way to spend my time, because the most important part of our business is our team. And okay, spending time with our team, you know, we have events, you know, we cater dinner and bring everybody in and we do things like that. And to me, that's, if we don't have our people and our people aren't happy, we have nothing else. So I think that's actually the best use of my time.
And they get that? They get a sense of you and your relationship with them because you've cooked food for them?
Yeah. I mean, it's a small thing, but like it's important. And they realize, I think everyone on our team realizes that we care about their success and their development and things like that too.
Okay. All right. So you're cooking for them. You're creating a family. I've found that letting someone go is tough enough as it is. I don't understand how some people can be callous about it. It's really tough. When you're family with someone, it's murder to let them go. You're basically killing them out of the family. Has that been an issue for you?
You know, it's interesting. We spend a lot of time up front to make sure we're bringing on the right people. And only 2 times in 4 years have we had to remove someone from our
team. Really? Mm-hmm. All right. So what's your process for bringing people in then?
Well, first, you know, we qualify resumes. You know, the first thing, we narrow it down there. And we'll, when we're looking, say, to hire a front-end developer, right? We'll narrow it down to about 10 resumes. And our CTO personally looks at each one. And then, you know, the first interview comes in, and like our interviews are brutal. I wouldn't want to have to go through myself, but it's actually like a 3 or 4 hour process of, you know, just discussing, you know, not only assessing skill level, but, you know, they actually having discussions about like how they feel about, you know, we don't want people that are in the business to make money. We want people that are passionate and love what they do. And as much as their skills important, but also a personality fit. Do they believe in the same things we believe in? And because that's how we're going to get the people that will want to be around long term.
And so what's your process for, you know what, let's go back even to where you found them. Where are you finding these people?
Ideally, referrals from existing employees.
What do you do to get those referrals? Do you incentivize? Do you just Slack mm-hmm. everyone?
We incentivize. It's, you know, and because our people that work for us, like they believe in making the company successful, we believe that they're only going to bring in people that will make them look good. So like that's our, anyone that an existing developer, like, hey, I'm my friend and he is, you know, he's a great JavaScript guy. He'd be a good fit here. Like those ultimately get like the highest priority.
Okay, so you need a new position, you message everyone, someone comes in and says, I've got a friend, you're more likely to interview them. What else do you do to find new people beyond the connections to people you already have?
So we actually do a lot of cultural events. So when we built our most recent office in Warsaw, we have this huge loft, you know, it's about, you know, 8,000 square feet, but it's actually designed to be, like we brought the San Francisco type office to Warsaw. Like there's cool open areas, couches, foosball tables, all that kind of stuff, which is abnormal for Poland. So we've created this really cool thing, and we do monthly things. Like last month was machine learning month, and then we did security month, and we actually do training on these things. And it's not just for our people. Like the local developer community is welcome to join, like to come in. And, you know, we host events there, like dinners and parties we do for like not only us, but we invite all the local dev houses and stuff too. So we bring, you know, other partners in, and we try to make ourselves well known in the community.
Okay. All right. So you get people, and I get the benefit of that, by the way. Events can be a pain in the butt, but man, they're so effective. Because that personal interaction sticks with people. They will remember you for a long time. Frankly, it's kind of dangerous how much they'll remember. If they meet you at an event, you may not have a memory of it, but they're in your house, in your place, looking around at your stuff. They remember you, and they'll bring it up later on. Right? All right, so they come in. You guys go through your process. How systemized are you about the questions that you ask?
We have a standard list of things, yeah, the basics, but we really kind of let the conversation organically flow from there. You know, we start things off and then we see where it goes, and that's kind of our best gauge. You know, we do one-on-one interviews. I've had other companies where we do group interviews, but in this one, we feel like a one-on-one interview is most important. And once they've like passed that barrier, then we'll bring in like the whole team, like we'll bring in multiple team members to like kind of have a group talk with them. Like other developers too, because we want to see if they're going to be a fit with the other developers they're going to have to work with. If the people that work with us now have a bad feeling about them, then, you know, even though we might think it's a right fit, ultimately they're the ones that are going to have to be on the same team. So we trust their input.
What's your breakdown? How do you know when to hire someone in Poland versus the US versus somewhere else? I'm looking at your list of current openings, and a lot of them seem to be in Poland. So how do you, like the iOS person that you're looking for, you want them in Warsaw. How do you know that that's what you're looking for?
So we keep our engineering in Warsaw and we keep our project management stateside.
I see. Got it. Okay. So that makes things a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then this office manager that you're looking for in the US, right?
Both actually. So
I see. So you want someone there and someone here. Two different people?
Yeah, we have a dual approach. So like project managers, right? We have a US project manager and every project has a Polish project manager and a US project manager. So the client, it almost gives, with the time zone change, almost gives the client 24-hour access to a project manager. It kind of has a checks and balances for things not falling through the cracks, because both project managers have to be in the loop all the time. So that was one of the things we embraced early on and some of the other people have started doing that now, but that was a new thing that we started, having project managers on both sides.
I asked you before we started, what do you do to help your people make proper decisions? And you said, we have clearly defined focuses on the information that we give clients. How does what you told me before about the way you interact with clients help your people make better decisions?
Well, we spend a lot of time to make sure we understand their goals, not just technology, but business goals. And we pass that on to the developers, because if they... you know, if everyone's going the same, sounds so obvious and simple, but it is like, if everybody has aligned goals and are going the same direction, then everyone is like, they're working towards something common, and generally things are a lot more successful. And,
you know, and the way that they see it is they all see that same Slack group. They all see the cards in Trello. They all see the forms, or have access to the forms that the people filled out when they were starting out.
Yeah. And actually the neat thing though, and we have access levels, of course, between like what information goes to what people. And that's a really cool thing we did with Zapier too, because every project. So when we create Slack channels, there's not one, there's three for every project. There's the, you know, say if we were doing a project for you, right, there'd be the Andrew Warner project, and we'd hit WAR would be the project code. And there'd be WAR team that everybody's in, WAR management, which has the, like, you know, the management, the project managers on the team. And then there's the WAR board, and board has our four partners that, where we discuss things like very high level things that not, you know, that some that shouldn't be part of the discussion with the rest of the team. And Zapier actually takes the information on that that's and put it on the Trello card, and creates a custom PDF for each room with the information they need. Like the boardroom talks about budgets and client things like that. Like those aren't things that the team cares about. And we're really like, we're not trying to hide that thing, but like we give people the information they need and they don't need to know that. Like we're not going to waste their time with that.
How do you keep track of all this activity on Slack?
Well, we have a lot of Slack channels. Thankfully, I am religiously using Slack reminders, you know, if there's something I need to do later, I use Slack reminders. I think that was one of the greatest improvements they made in that product in the past.
Slack reminders, as opposed to even project management or other reminders, you want it all in Slack. But doesn't that mean that Slack becomes too noisy? You have your own reminders, which are important, but there's no way to prioritize them. You have messages from their team where they're just interacting with the client and you don't necessarily need to pay attention. You have private messages to you. Isn't that too much?
No, I mean, I mute the channels that are not like team channels. I generally mute. I'm there if someone, but people know that I'm not reading the team channel unless they tag me and something's important. But, you know, we, So yeah, I mute the channels I don't need to be in. And generally I'm just in board and management channels, which actually have a lot less communication in them, because usually those are issues or things that the project managers need help figuring out and they need some guidance.
And we encourage and you know that one's lit up, you got to go in or bolded, I think is what it is.
Right. And we encourage, like, we trust our people to make decisions, but we encourage them to ask questions and never be afraid that they're asking a stupid question or things like that too. Cause we like, everything's a team effort.
I get why you would use it. I feel like for us, we recently made the mistake of going to Asana, and it's a pain. It's really robust and it's very helpful, and I love a lot of it. All conversations happen within a task, so you know what we're focused on, what's the outcome, not just what the chat is. And you can also automate the creation of tasks and so on based on what the project is. The thing that I like about Basecamp better than Asana is everything's in this one place. All the communication happens there. Like the project communication happens there. Any conversation around tasks happen there. Chats happen there, like through campfires. I could ping someone one-on-one there. So everyone has this one home base. And the problem that I have with Slack is their app takes the whole freaking monitor, right? So you can't even have this screen be my project management and my Slack screen. You have to basically give it its own big window.
So this is why I have three monitors, and you're right.
Three monitors, right? Yeah. And then you need another one. So one monitor is what, just for chat?
So I have these three 4K 28-inch monitors, two horizontal, one vertical. Yeah, and basically everything I use gets a square. So I have six different squares. I have my calendar, I have Slack, I have email, I have Skype, and I do like iMessage and then like Safari. Those are kind of my open windows all the time.
And those are just open all the time.
Yeah, and I can just look around and see them.
For me, it's calendar on one screen all the time because I just keep moving through the calendar. All right, I get that. But man, it's a lot. You know what I was trying to do this weekend is, do you know BlueStacks?
No.
I think it's called BlueStack. It's BlueStack. It's an app that lets you put Android apps. Yeah, BlueStacks lets you put Android apps on your desktop. And I thought, little Slack window is so nice. Why is it that when I'm on mobile, I have this little tiny window that has all the information that I need and easily gives me access to the rest. But when I'm on my desktop, all these apps want full real estate. Asana wants the whole desktop, right? My calendar from Google needs my whole desktop for me to see the whole week. But on my phone, I could just tilt it to the side and that little screen captures a lot of information. So I thought, how about if I just put Android apps on one screen? All those little windows will be perfectly fine, good for interaction. But you know what? I'm reluctant to put another piece of software on my computer, and yeah, maybe I will. I just kept reading a lot of bad reviews about bugs in BlueStacks. But frankly, that seems ideal to me. A lot of little windows, just like they work on my phone.
Yeah.
All right. I think we've covered a lot here today. You know what? Here's the one thing that I wanted to ask you about, because this has been important for me too at Mixergy. You said to me before we started that you're really big on enabling your team not just to hit the company goals, but also their personal goals. What's an example of a personal goal and how do you help them do that?
Well, you know, we like, you know, these sound like cheesy, like sayings that everyone says, but like work-life balance is important. And, you know, we actively make sure, you know, that people, you know, we don't want their work to overtake their whole life. We don't want them working, you know, 18 hours a day. But we feel in the right environment and work, their personal life gets better. Like we actually have a roadmap for people in their career to improve. And essentially some other people look at us and are like, wait, but you're basically training these people to leave you because they are go on to bigger and better things. But to us, like it doesn't really seem like that. And if the they stay with us, they appreciate it. But we also, if people have things that they care about, and like we sponsor groups that they're involved in, and
like there's
a physicist group in Warsaw, like, and we actually, you know, one of our early team members, like it's something he cares about and he volunteers for. So we actually donate office space to them. And like, we try to do things, you know, we care about the same things that our team cares about. So like, you know, we do fun stuff. Like we try, our relationship should not all be about business. And we took everyone out for paintball a few weeks ago and just rented out the place and brought everyone and had a giant war. Like, so those things like that, like, bring in an element of fun and friendship into the business type into the business world. So like they can enjoy being at work and just makes them happier in general.
Are you guys doing, are you doing as a business over $1 million in profits annually?
Actually, we're in profit. We're not that profitable because we've been growing so much and we're investing all our money back in the company.
I see. Is the goal to eventually be able to sell it? Because agencies like yours are tough.
Not in the near future. We all love what we're doing so much. Like it's our dream to do this. So, building it, and actually our team is a good size, but we've built it slow on purpose with the right people, not compromising with, easy hires and just building a good foundation. Cause we have to deliver every single time. The second we start not delivering 100%, like the business will fall apart.
All right. The website for anyone who wants to try it out. Well, actually, there's not much to try out. There's a lot to read. The one thing that I think they could try out is where's that feature that I saw that lets me get a price for an app before so, you guys? It's not on swingdev.io, is it?
Yeah, but we're playing with some things on there. We're about to release a new version, so there may be some different things going on there. But swingdev.io is where everything will be.
Maybe it was on Dapper Gentleman that I saw that.
It might be, but we don't. That's a...
That's a temporary site that you still use. It is on Dapper Gentleman. That's where it was.
There. Yeah, but we're actually Swing is the company now that's doing everything. Okay. That's where I am, and but we do have similar things there, and it's people can go there to find out more.
So the website is swingdev.io, and since I'm on a walking treadmill, let me hit the button. Let's see what it sounds like on camera. 3, 2, 1, go there. Because this is a big countdown just for this short walk. Like I'm gonna get flung off of it. This makes a lot of noise, doesn't it? Here, I'll be quiet. Can you hear it?
Barely. It's not horrible.
Barely. All right. Interesting. Yeah, all right. So I'm gonna close this out by saying thank you to my two sponsors as I walk away from this interview. The first is, and we talked about a lot of software here that you can use to automate your business. The first one automates your marketing. It's ActiveCampaign.com/Mixergy. And the second one is a tool that I use to close sales. And I have a screencast of myself using it. If you want to check it out, it's at Mixergy.com/pipedrive. Mixergy.com/pipedrive. Thanks so much, Joe. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.